Dr. Kimberly Ivory is a senior lecturer in population medicine and sub-dean of student support in the Sydney Medical School at the University of Sydney. The recent sudden deaths of four psychiatry trainees in Victoria prompted Dr. Ivory to write a piece for Crokey, the crikey.com.au health blog, which she entitled A Call for Medicine to Stop Devouring Its Young. Dr. Ivory speaks with the MJA's engagement editor, Kate Swanell. Let's talk a little bit about the piece you wrote for Crokey.
Yeah.
Was it just the deaths of the registrars that provoked you to do that, or is this something that's been brewing with you for a while?
No, not at all. My role at the university is sub-dean student support, and I started doing that last year. One of the things that we do, not just as sub-deans, but within our faculty, is that students have to write reflections on experiences they have, and then they have an interview with an academic and talk through their reflections. It's one of our personal and professional development exercises. And a student made an appointment to come and see me to discuss her reflections, and they send the article to you beforehand. And I read through them, and all three of her reflections related to incidents that could be considered to be very unethical, and one of them was definitely related to sexual harassment. However, when we talked about it in depth, you know, the issue, she raised the issue of sexual harassment and gender inequality in the medical school, and we talked about that at length. And it prompted me, and her other reflections prompted me, to make some more inquiries. But it became apparent that the issues of sexual harassment, bullying, teaching by humiliation, none of those things had gone away since I'd been a medical student and had experienced them and seen other people experience them. And so it sort of escalated from there. We started to develop a project where we're trying to address the issue of bullying and harassment in the workplace from a kind of a more creative approach. I started to have conversations with the Medical Students Association, mm-hmm. who were interested in following up and looking at sexual and gender inequalities.
Yeah.
The deaths of the registrars just kind of prompted a response.
One of the things you say in that article is that asking the question, why didn't these young doctors seek help, is a form of victim shaming and really not the question we should be asking. Because there are support services, but there is something stopping particularly young doctors from seeking that help. And so how do we get to the heart of that issue, and how do we turn it around?
Well, as I said in the article, I absolutely believe that the medical culture is at the core of this, that there are doctors who shame doctors, and then there is stigma within the wider community as well that, you know, doctors should be somehow infallible. It's not to say that there aren't supports available and that help isn't available, or that there aren't colleagues who are willing and able to provide support. But there are definite barriers to doctors accessing that support. And that's particularly true of young doctors in their training years, mm-hmm. because of the fear that it will somehow be detrimental to their progression. And it's also true of doctors in smaller communities, where they may be known to all of the, you know, psychological and counselling services, the local pharmacy. You know, you just don't want to be seen walking into some of those places.
Yeah.
And it comes back again to what I said about context. You know, it can be very much determined by the doctor's own personality and determination to get help, by the sort of supports they have around them, the sort of colleagues they work with, the sort of workplace in which they work. So, for example, a high-powered tertiary hospital might be a more difficult workplace than a supportive general practice with three or four other colleagues who've got an interest in mental health. So it's a very complex industry. And it's not enough to talk about, you know, this is what should happen, because there have to be responses from all of those areas of medicine.
Is there a generational effect going on here?
I think there will be generational change. And, I see young doctors are much more aware of a work-life balance. They're much more aware of the issues around mental health. And that's a society-wide change in attitudes towards mental health issues. But I don't think we can just wait for generational change, because the culture is so strongly entrenched and the culture is replicated by modelling. And so if people see bad behaviours modelled and they think that's what I've got to do to get ahead, they then adopt those behaviours and they perpetrate them. And that's where our project is hoping to tackle the issue by training young doctors and medical students and clinical tutors about ways of modelling more positive behaviours, more positive professional qualities. We're hoping to use acting techniques in order to do that, to provide people with skills to actually not just, when I say acting skills, people think, oh, you know, we're going to teach them to pretend to be good. But that's not exactly what we're saying. What we're saying is that actors take on a role just as doctors take on a role, but they have the skills to interpret that role in the context in which they find themselves. Yes. And then to modify it according to the dynamics of what's happening around them. And they're very specialised skills which we think will translate very well into the clinical teaching space where, you know, there is no script. Things happen, and if you've got skills that allow you to interpret what's happening and then respond to it in a way that is central to your core beliefs, we believe that we can impact positively on the culture.
Is there a role to play in the way we select medical students?
There's a lot of discussion around this in the literature, and I personally tend to lean towards the belief that, yes, there is a need to consider how we select medical students. Different programs use different techniques.
Yeah.
Also, we're finding that we have a postgraduate entry program, mm-hmm. which when it was first instigated, attracted a lot of older people who had post-first degree work experience. And that gap is now narrowing. Mm-hmm. The cohorts are becoming younger. They're streaming from their first degree into medicine. So they're having less life experience outside of that. And I personally believe that that is making a difference. I think students who are older, who've had some life experience, particularly the ones who've had some kind of clinical experience, so maybe they've been in allied health, for example, they seem to get what it means to be a doctor, the complexities of it. Whereas somebody who's gone from school to medical science into medicine still brings with them all of the problems that we used to have with the undergraduate entry programs, taking people straight from high school. They just haven't had that breadth of experience and they really just don't get the complexity of the job. Nobody does work experience as a doctor in year 10.
No.
It's not possible. And so your experience of being a doctor is shaped by whatever health experiences you've had as a person or within your family, your visits to your GP, or maybe you had a broken arm, or maybe you had some time in hospital, or maybe you've had a relative who's had a chronic illness. And that's what shapes your impression of what medicine is, for better or for worse.
Yeah. What would you like to see happen in the wake of these really sad deaths and the conversation that's going on about mandatory reporting? What if you were queen for a day, what would you like to see happen next?
I'm really glad to see this conversation happening, and I'm really glad to see what you've described as a perfect storm, because I think it's a perfect storm that's been a long time coming. I read a comment on my article today where somebody said, oh, this will all just die down and the same old will happen, essentially. I actually don't think that will happen, because I think change happens in incremental steps.
Yes.
And it's not just a steady progress to change. You know, something happens, it triggers a conversation, and then people get motivated. And then, okay, things die down, but it's stepwise. You know, and I think this is making a big step. When we put forward the idea that we want to do this project, and I was at a funding round at the university, and I said that I was looking for people who are interested in this, the level of interest that generated was massive from across all of the healthcare faculties. The response I've had to that article has been massive. I've had emails from people around the world responding to that and saying, this happened to me, or I'm so glad people are talking about this. So I don't think it's a conversation that will necessarily stop. Good. And I think that's a really important thing, that the conversation goes on and that we engage more and more with the people who can make a difference. And I'd love to say I have an answer, but I don't have a universal answer, obviously. What I can say is that that people shouldn't be put off entering medicine if that's where their passion lies. I would like to suggest that people should only do medicine if they really are passionate and really do want to do it, because that makes any pain worthwhile.
And not just because they got the scores to get in.
Absolutely, absolutely. Or because mum and dad say they should do it, or because of any other social pressure or whatever. So if people are following it because they love it, they will feel positive about it and they'll generate positivity. The other thing I think is that most medical schools, in particular I know ours does, provides very good support services for their students.
Yeah.
And students need to take advantage of those support services before they have trouble. They need to know what's available, what some of the stresses might be, and make sure that they have methods in place to deal with them. The other thing I'd suggest is that they are supportive of their colleagues. One of the things that does happen is that discrimination starts early, and people pick on each other and say nasty things about each other. In fact, one of my students recently who failed told me that she was really, really worried about repeating because of the stigma of repeating. I said, what are you talking about, the stigma of repeating? She said, people write things on our Facebook pages, because they have student Facebook pages, saying things like, oh, I'd never go to a doctor who failed an exam, which is, you know, absolutely horrible if you're on the receiving end, and absolutely naive, the process of what it takes to be a doctor. There is no doctor who ever graduated or whoever did anything who hasn't failed something. And far better to fail an exam early and have another go and make a better fist of it than to fail in your duty of care to a patient later on because you made some terrible mistake. You know, failure is about learning from your mistakes. Yeah. And so, you know, that's another thing. I really encourage them to be kind to each other and to realise that they're all human. They're terribly competitive, and that is part of the problem.
Is there something amongst the support services offered by medical schools that includes learning how to reduce the stigma?
It's something that we're working on. We run workshops in working with diversity, and the premise of those workshops is based on understanding that we are all diverse in all sorts of different ways. It's not something that only other people have. Mm-hmm. And so we talk a fair bit about the impact of stigma and discrimination in that, in a kind of a general sense, not specifically directed at medical students and their mental health, but trying to get them to understand that we live and work in a complex environment and we're all part of that. One of the things that happens when you're in medical school is you get very immersed in the hospital and specialist culture of medicine. And it's easy to think that that's it. And I think, you know, if we're talking about careers, it's important for people to cast their nets wide when they're making inquiries about what their future career paths could be. Because as you've pointed out, you work with a whole bunch of doctors who have chosen publishing as a career.
Yeah.
I work with a whole bunch of doctors who've chosen public health as a career. And, you know, for all sorts of reasons, you know, I come from a general practice background. I think it's important that medical students and young doctors understand that medicine is a really broad church. And just because hospital medicine doesn't suit you, or be, you know, specialist, the competitiveness of getting into a specialist training program doesn't suit you, doesn't mean you can't have a really successful, really productive career. And, you know, I think if there's any message that they need, it's that.
Terrific.
And perhaps choose your medical school as well according to what you think your interests might be, because they all offer different sorts of programs. You know, some of them are very research tertiary medicine orientated. Others are very much community health, primary care orientated. Some are rural health orientated. So there is the opportunity now to choose a program that might suit your particular passions.